This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And yes, this is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector, as always, Friday morning, 9 o'clock, or just afterwards. And as we have been over the last number of weeks at the beginning of this new year, because it's an election year, we have been looking at the landscape, the socio-political, economic, intellectual landscape of things in South Africa without necessarily getting into the deep end of who's going to win and by how many points and which party is going to have what seat. Because I think it's more important that we explore the underlying tissue that holds things together that allows us to understand what is going to happen in this election, or at least give us some clues. And who better than someone we've talked with before, Dion Chang. As his website describes it, it says he's a strategic thinker, a keynote speaker, a walking ideas bank, and a professional cage rattler. Those are strong words. He's the founder of an organization called Flux Trends, and we had a chance a few weeks ago to talk to one of his colleagues, Bronwyn Williams, also from Flux Trends. And Dion has all manner of thinking on these questions. He writes columns in newspapers. He writes for the magazine Acumen. A little footnote here. I was an author in the very first edition, the very first issue of Acumen years and years ago. And he contributes to a variety of radio programs elsewhere. And he got his start not as a futurologist or a scenario planner or a big picture thinker. He came out of the fashion industry, and he was writing on fashion and the way fashion trends were going. And I'm guessing that led him in this direction to this other area of broader social, political, economic, cultural thinking, and that fashion was an entryway for him. Dion, I'm delighted to have you here.
Thank you, Brooks.
To draw on your knowledge, your wisdom, and your speculations. We were talking just before we went on air that your organization has just completed a new trends analysis. Tell us a little bit about this, and maybe we can then examine each of the main thematic trends or disciplinary trends that you have identified and where they're going.
Okay, great. Thanks, Brooks. And yes, I came out of a completely different industry. I'm actually about to go into a very different trajectory, but we can discuss that another day because I've actually trained as a end-of-life doula. So that gives people quite a bit of a shock to sit down for a while. But like I said, we can discuss that a little bit later. But things change.
But we'll do it later. But in the meantime, we'll go with what you're doing now.
Yes, but they do overlap because, as do the fashion trajectory. But what we're going to chat about today is something that we do at the beginning of every year, and it's become a rather highly anticipated trend briefing. I give this a lot to boards of directors or excos of companies, or I'm asked to open conferences with this because it gives a very, very generalized but sharp and executive summary of where the world is and where it's going. So the state we're in, we theme it every year, and it follows the acronym TRENDS, so T-R-E-N-D-S. Within that acronym, we can cover technology, the state of retail, state of the economy, the natural world, diplomacy, and social and cultural trends. So you can kind of see why it's a really good snapshot of where the world is and where it's going. As I said, we theme it every year. This last year's theme called The Great Unraveling and the Rise of the Machines. This year, we've called this one Aftershocks, Reframing Resilience, Recharging, and Not Enduring, because we've had 3 years basically of repeated aftershocks, and they don't seem to be dissipating. So we have to kind of rethink endurance. I wrote a column for City Press a while back, which gave people a bit of a wry smile, because I said South Africans, I said it's become an insult to call South Africans resilient, because I think we're quite tired of being resilient. I think we've written the handbook on endurance, and we don't need to endure anymore. So that thought came into this presentation. But it starts off, and I think we should start off at the beginning, you know, with technology, because that's such a key driver. But the actual trend briefing, I show a video. I always like to give a bellwether of where we are and where we stand. And the clip I play, and I've only given this to a couple of audiences, and you can just see the absolute either shock or horror on their faces, because I said, you know, who would have thought that you could get a physics lecture by Kim Kardashian and Taylor Swift? And then I play this, and it, obviously Kim Kardashian and Taylor Swift didn't record this physics lecture, but it is where generative AI has advanced in the last 12 months. So essentially it is scraping, which is a word people are going to hear more and more, scraping their likeness and their voice off the internet. And then generative AI just puts it together into a physics lecture. So it's quite a remarkable thing. So, but I say to people, you know, it feels a little like we've entered the twilight zone. And I just want to, for the listeners, just to give two definitions, and you, the listeners, can tell me if they feel that this is what it feels like in 2024. So basically, number one is a state of mind between, somewhere between reality and fantasy, a dreamlike or hallucinatory state. And when you see Kim Kardashian giving and Taylor Swift giving a physics lecture, you might think you are hallucinating. And then number two is really a vague or uncertain state or condition, the blurring of right and wrong. And I know you've been chatting about elections, as you said in the intro, and I think this is going to be really pivotal. The confluence of where technology and specifically generative AI and deep fakes are, with a year where half of humanity, 64 countries plus the European Union and 17 countries on the African continent, all going on to elections. So it's a really pivotal one, but it is a pivotal year that is going to be battered by these kind of headwinds of deep fakes and things that you just don't know if they are real or not.
I'll interrupt you for a second and just say sure. That there's already been a scandal of sorts in the U.S. primary election system, in which a message that was clearly put together through AI techniques that sounded exactly like Joe Biden telling voters to vote a different way than they might otherwise have done. And it went out all over the landscape in South Carolina. And I listened to it, and it really did sound exactly like him.
Well, to that point, it is one of the things we cover in this trend briefing. There's a commercial app called Covers AI. And basically, I call it the new playground of scrape data, because on this specific platform, you are able to, it's called a, the subtext is a presidential voice generator. So you can get everyone from Biden to Trump to Vladimir Putin to Xi Jinping to Macron, Zelensky, Bolsonaro, any leader you want. And it's literally a sort of a click and drag and drag and drop functionality. And you're able to put somebody's voice onto that moving image. If you layer that onto where we were, let's say at the beginning of 2023, we were all quite astounded by the text-to-text generative AI. So you prompt ChatGPT and you say, I want this written, whatever, whatever. And people were wringing their hands, worried about, you know, what about school kids handing in homework that's been written by generative AI, all of that kind of thing. That moved quite swiftly along to text-to-imagery. So you have platforms like Midjourney, where you can just say a Wes Anderson-type scene with a house and put in the woods. And you'll get that. What I was quite astounded to find just at the end of last year when we were putting this year's presentation together was a platform called Pika, and it's a text-to-video AI generation app. And you can literally type in, if you look at the promo video there, they say, you know, you type in man riding a horse. And then depending on the prompts, you can have man riding a horse on the moon, man riding a horse, you know, in the 1880s on the moon or whatever. And it is an instantaneous generation of that moving video. So it is, we've kind of leaped exponentially in 12 months with generative AI. So where do we go from here? A lot of people are asking me. So the next step is something called interactive AI. So this is like the Internet of Things, but for robotics and for AI. So there are companies around the world, some in America, some in China, that want to mass produce humanoid robots by the end of this year. So one American company is aiming to produce 10,000 robots a year. So the movie iRobot, which came out in, well, 2 decades ago, 2004, is coming true. And China wants to be the global leader by 2027 in mass producing these robots. So when interactive AI comes in, that means your artificial intelligence kind of bypasses what humans have to do, and they speak directly to the robots to automate a system or a factory or something. And this is really close, because the humanoid robots that this company wants to produce are already deployed, if I can use that word, deployed in Amazon warehouses around the world. So
I'm going to stop you there while we cope with that vision and do a station break with real people still. And this is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, your host, and we're speaking with Dion Chang, who is painting a universe in which we will no longer know anything about anything, except that it's not what we think it was. But we'll be right back after this message.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, your host, and my guest today is Dion Chang, who is painting, I don't know whether the word is horrific or extraordinary or unimaginable or only too imaginable, picture of, you know, what we are basically poised on the precipice of in a world where things will never be quite what we thought they were. But if I listen to you, it's already here and we don't know who we're talking about or with whom anyway.
No, exactly. I use the word, just because I'm so deeply into it, I use the word interesting very cautiously to people, because people are either completely horrified or they're completely fascinated. So I take a middle line and say, it's on my radar and it's very interesting. I'll move on to the next pillar to bring us back into reality, Brooks. The retail pillar, the R in trends. And that's quite a fascinating one. I mean, on the one hand, it's quite lighthearted, but on the other hand, it just kind of shows where the disparities lie and where the inequalities are starting to happen, which I'll unpack a little bit more into sort of with economies, but I can maybe do those in parallel. But, you know, we've seen 2023 was not only a bad year for consumers. We had, you know, this cost of living crisis around the world, and you saw a lot of retailers respond with different systems that they bake into their pricing models. There's drip pricing. If ever you have booked an airline, Google for a fantastic price, you see that price. And by the time you've gone through all the hoops and jumps that you have to go through and add on baggage and seat choices and flexibility and everything, it is, you know, at least 5,000, not more, if not more than the price that you've started out at. So on the one hand, you've got drip pricing, you've got surge pricing. So if anybody has tried to do an e-hailing with an Uber or anything like that at a peak event, stadium concert or a sporting match, you will see that you suddenly pay double or triple for that price just because of the demand. The one that most customers would have felt, if not sort of seen or been conscious of, is shrinkflation. So you're getting smaller chocolate bars, biscuits, whatever it is, for the same price. So they're trying to, in a way, protect their customer and not bleed customer loyalty. So they just shrink the amount that you get, but they charge you the same. So you, in the end, you're kind of losing out anyway. One of the unusual things of this cost of living crisis in 2023 is a sociocultural one. It's we started to see a lot of things about articles about, I can't afford my friends anymore. You're seeing this specifically, not exclusively, but specifically, obviously, with younger people who have maybe just started out. They're earning their first paychecks, everything, and they have friends who are on a higher pay grade, and you all go out to dinner, but you can't afford to go to the same restaurants and afford the same meals and order the bottles of champagne or wine that your friends can. So it's actually starting to redefine friendships, because if you can't afford to hang out with those people, then you can't do that. And there's a strange thing called loud budgeting, where people are now in 2024 actually saying, I'm sorry, I actually can't do this. And I keep declining social invitations because I just can't afford to do that. So it's just a really strange thing. And just on the back of that is a very interesting observation that we picked up from The Economist. So this is a post-pandemic consumer shift. And for any retailers that are listening, this should be heeded well. It's called the hermit consumer. So we know that after lockdown, people got more used to ordering online, having things delivered to their homes, your Uber Eats, your food comes into you. But with the cost of living crisis layered on top of that, you have people that are wanting to spend more on spend their disposable income less on activities outside the home and invest more for things that are in your own cocoon. So yes, we did have a little spate about a year ago of revenge travel when people just decided to hell with it. Let's just go and travel and we'll just blow the budget on that. But I think in 2024, people have kind of sobered up to that. It's now the hermit consumer. So the reason why it's on my radar is that The Economist has pegged this as a $600 billion shift a year in consumer behavior. So that's not to be sneezed at. And that's a global thing. It's
A fair piece of change. It must be worldwide. Yeah,
it is. So if you are a retailer, I would think quite deeply about that.
I'm going to offer a joke right now, only because the dystopian universe you're moving us into is quite terrifying. Have you noticed how often you now are presented on websites with a nine block matrix of things where you have to pick every block that has a bridge or a boat or something. And the tagline is prove you are human. And
yes,
I'm realizing that the machine is asking you to prove that you are a person so that you can interact with the machine.
Yeah, I actually wrote a column about that. And I said, you know, isn't that the biggest irony of all is that we are now having to prove to the machines that we are actually human. And you have to go through all of those kind of things. It's very, very irritating. But it is going. So it's what we're going to have to deal with. Hence, last year's trend briefing, the rise of the machine. And yes, they did rise.
I didn't mean to take you off the track, but because I'm staring at my copy of The Economist right now, and there's a story about how people younger people, 18 to 29, are getting their news increasingly through TikTok. 30-some% of the population gets its news there from an animated fish.
As I said, we have entered the twilight zone. So you do feel that you are in a hallucinatory state as well. Maybe I'll lighten the mood a little. So I'll drag you off the dystopian precipice, because in the economy, there are more depressing facts. But one interesting one that I'll just give you from our economy pillar is the Taylor Swift economy. So I mentioned at the start that, you know, her likeness is being used to give a physics class. The news at the moment is everyone's in an uproar because there are deepfake porn videos coming out of Taylor Swift, and X actually decided to cancel or block all searches for Taylor Swift on that. People think, well, why did Time magazine put Taylor Swift as person of the year at the end of last year when there are world wars going, or almost the possibility of world wars
other stuff.
Other stuff. I thought, let me actually explain why. So I don't know if the listeners will actually realize that there is such a thing as Swiftian studies. You are able to study the Taylor Swift economy or the Taylor Swift business model. And for people who scoff at that or brush it off, I just want to rattle off some of the universities that actually have Swiftian studies. So I'll start with maybe the lesser known ones, and then I'll build up for my big reveal. So let's say University of Florida has Swiftian studies, University of Texas in America, Arizona State University. And then the other ones in America, Stanford University has a course on Taylor Swift, Harvard University, as well as University of Berkeley as well. Outside of America, the Queen Mary University of London has Swiftian studies, as does the University of Ghent in Belgium. And in February this year, her tour will have reached Australia. And in Melbourne, they are hosting an academic conference. I just want to say that again, it's not a pop culture conference, an academic conference purely based on Taylor Swift. And to the point of her tour, the Federal Reserve in America gave her an acknowledgement and a shout out for boosting her tour, boosting the US economy to up to $4.6 $1 billion spend in the US. That's pretty.
I'm going to stop you right there because we have to do another break. But okay. I will simply mention for your information that she is the first musician who has actually breached the $1 billion earning for herself from music rather than all the other stuff that goes with it.
Yes.
And of course, now she's entangled deeply in the Super Bowl in the United States in American football because of her boyfriend, partner.
Yes, her boyfriend, but yes.
We'll be right back with the rest of this conversation. You know, who knows where it's going next. This is Brooke Spector and The Deep Dive, and we're speaking with Dion Chang, who is educating me about Taylor Swift.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And this is The Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector, and we're speaking with Dion Chang, the world's expert on Taylor Swift, it appears, among all these other things. And we were just discussing before the break how much Taylor Swift is contributing to the economy and how academic conferences and university courses are now being offered for students to learn about the ins and outs of a popular music singer.
Yes. And it goes even deeper than that. So one of her claim to fame now, she can do that, is she's done what nobody's really ever done before, is get a airline. This is LATAM Airlines, the largest airline in South America, to actually change their change fees. So what happened, it happened in Buenos Aires in Argentina. She had to postpone her concert due to bad weather. And we know that with climate change, we're getting to that now, how bad that can really, really get. So a whole lot of fans, well, her army of fans had to change their flights, all of those kind of things. This airline made a complete, never happened before, announcement that they will waive all of the change fees for all of the Swifties, what her fans are called, just because there was such a high volume of them and it would have affected so many thousands of people to that concert. But staying in South America as well, she has political influence as well, not directly, although she has been very outspoken about that, but her legion of fans, the Swifties, as well as the Korean, before they broke up, the BTS. But at the moment, the Swifties are giving Argentina's far right a really, really bad time. So they have mobilized on social media and they are a force to be reckoned with Argentina's far right. And we know politically that there's a lot of swing around the world to the far right. So that's a bit of a political influence as well as an economic one as well.
This is extraordinary stuff. Move on to your next pillar.
I'll do this one. Let me do it as quickly as possible because I want to link the political part of it because that's quite concerning this year and you spoke about that. But of course we know, so the natural world, we do know that things are becoming dire. What has been quite phenomenal is that at Davos, there has been finally a recognition between climate change and human health. And in the natural world, we unpack all of those things. So there's obviously, we're feeling those effects of extreme weather. I always say to people, if 2020 was the year of the pandemic, 2021 was the wake-up call to climate change. And if we weren't quite fully awake, we got slapped awake in 2022 with more extreme weather, with floods, with heat domes, all of those things. To the extent that... we are now producing, and I kid you not, heat-resistant crops and heat-resistant cows. So there is actually a new apple that was launched last year at a fruit big sort of fair called Tutti, as in Italian Tutti, and it's the world's first climate-tolerant apple that has that. So what we've been really tracking it at Flux for the past 3 years is how climate change is affecting food security. And it's quite a serious thing, which is why heat-resistant cows, who knew? But it's a tweak of their DNA so that they become less stressed in extreme weather, because if there's extreme weather, they don't produce as much milk, which then has that ripple effect of supply and demand. And the supply and demand goes even further. So while the world politically is looking at the Red Sea and what's happening with the Houthis there, the Panama Canal is getting to dangerously low levels of water because of the drought there. So the number of ships, cargo ships that can go through the canal has dropped from about 38 crossings to 24 crossings, which doesn't maybe seem a lot, but if you imagine how much produce these huge container ships actually push in, that decrease of that because of water levels declining is a very, very serious one as well. I want to skip to the political one because I think that one's a very interesting one. So the we follow the Institute of the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance. They are in Sweden, and they had an alarming announcement that they said this is the sixth year they have seen what they refer to as a democratic recession. So they're saying, you know, it's not in sort of authoritarian governments or this dictatorships or anything, but it is happening. And we see it, he says, the spokesman, in America, you're seeing that, you're seeing it in all over Europe, that, you know, move to the right or away from that democratic ideal. And one of the reasons they give, and it's an interesting one, and you can see it actually unfolding, is what they're calling or what we've termed polyamorous geopolitics. So in another word, is a la carte.
Polyamorous
geopolitics. So a la carte diplomacy. So you kind of like the big buffet table of democracy, but you'd rather cherry pick from the side stand here, a little bit of a dictatorship, you'll have that little policy there. So you pick and choose and you get this kind of melange of policy, and it's not kind of pure democracy. It's a mishmash of a whole lot of other things. And dare I say it, we've seen polyamorous geopolitics right on our doorstep here as well, of sort of saying, well, we'll play with you, but we won't play with you, but we'll swing things a little bit for depending on all of those things. So I think a very interesting year. As you've also pointed out, I've heard you also say, you know, what we said at the start, more of half of humanity is going to polling stations and elections, and we shall see what happens here. But on the background of this is an interesting thing. We're seeing these huge social media CEOs being grilled in Congress in America at the moment.
A few days ago, yeah.
And but we've got a category about shadow diplomats. And it sounds, again, going back to, you know, are we in a twilight zone or not? This is a classic James Bond plot, okay? You have a mega wealthy business owner who owns multinational business, generally a global media empire, and has vast influences on global dynamics and is called in to speak to governments about that. Hello, Elon Musk. Hello, Sam Altman. You're having this weird parallel universe that people who are not in politics are now also shadow diplomats, and they can also affect these things. So it's just a James Bond plot that we're living in at the moment.
We're going to take another break, and we'll get back to you on that point in just a minute. This is The Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector, your host, and we are speaking with Dion Chang, who I hope is a real person, because we're talking about things that are so frightening, I'm now going to reassess everybody I talk to and everything I talk about. He's given me enormous amounts of things to think about. No, I know Dion is real. Don't get me wrong. But we'll be right back after this message.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector. Our guest today is Flux Trends head and chief thinker about the future and about the trends that are going to change all of our lives, Dion Chang. And the first thing I learned today from Dion was that I could get a physics lesson from Taylor Swift and Kim Kardashian, and that frightened me already. And then I opened up a copy of my new issue of The Economist, and it says that a third of Americans are getting their news on TikTok from a talking fish. So, I mean, I'm not entirely sure where we are anymore on this planet. But you were finishing up one of your the ecologically appropriate cow, I think it was. We'd moved on from that. We'd gone to some other. You'd gone to the thing. I think.
We were living into in a we left off on shadow diplomats that we basically right. we basically living in a James Bond movie with a few more twists and turns. But I think I'll take this opportunity. I mean, to actually go to the last pillar, and then we can just sort of if there's any other questions you have after this. But I think this will spark a lot of them because the socio-cultural pillar. The last of the six pillars generally is a more lighthearted one. But the times I've spoken about what's in this pillar, I think people have, their eyes have just widened even more. So Brooks, if you feel that you're in a twilight zone, just prepare to go deeper into a more hallucinatory state. I have a column actually coming out this week. And it is about an umbrella term of tech grief. So let's just go back into the twilight zone and into the Kim Kardashian and Taylor Swift physics lecture. And iRobot, I said, you know, that we're starting to mimic movies and James Bond movies. But I think your listeners will remember a movie called Her in 2013, where the protagonist was going through a divorce and fell in love with his laptop's operating system.
At
that stage, you've got, you know, voice things like Siri that had just come out. So you actually had software systems that could speak back at you. Well, 10 years later, this has not only come to fruition, but it has spawned an entire new sub-industry. So essentially, there has been a rash of these, the correct term are virtual companion apps. So you are able to go on to, I'll rattle off some. One is coincidentally and ironically called Chai, but not Chai, but Chai. Paradot, one appropriately called Noir. Character AI and Soulmate. So you choose a virtual avatar girlfriend, boyfriend, person friend, and you start having a text relationship with it. So what these sophisticated chatbots can do now are give you real-time conversation. So it's not a clunky chatbot of maybe 2 years ago that you might get on a business website where there's an automated answer that comes through. These give very sophisticated conversations to you. But
these things pass the Turing test, obviously.
Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. But what happens with startups being so volatile? What happens if that startup folds? They decommission the software. And this has happened. So on Soulmate, there was this outcry of grief and distress and anxiety because they shut down and all of the virtual relationships that people had established were no longer there. So the grief in terms of tech and digitization is real. So people started Zoom support groups. Somebody wanted to see if they could give a gallery of all of the avatars that people had lost to be able to do that. So it all happened because one of the pioneers in this field called Replica, they are able to bring people back to life or old photos back to life. And that is another rabbit hole I won't go down right now. But it was interesting because they removed a function on their app called erotic role play, where you had the ability to sext, so text with sex innuendo to your chatbot. So they removed that and all of these others sprang up. So people wanted obviously a deeper and intimate, more intimate relationship with their virtual companions. But it got so far that people are unable to retrieve their digital boyfriends and girlfriends. And there's a great gnashing of teeth and beating of the breasts happening around there. But it has a deeper undertone because ChatGPT has also launched a new chatbot store, or GPT store, they call it, which has up to 3 million customizable chatbots. That's a scary kind of precipice that you're on. And one of these things that they offer for people living in the real life now, because we need to establish if you are living in a virtual world or in a real world, but there's something called a ghost bot, which I feel quite uncomfortable about. And what the ghost bot does, so if you have somebody that has passed on and you would like to continue that conversation or conversations with them, daily conversations with them, what this ghost bot does is it feeds an archive of your text messages. So a almost, years long chat, WhatsApp conversations you've had with that person. It feeds that into the software, and the algorithm recreates real-time conversations that you can have. And it's not a regurgitation of an old text conversation. It is a completely new conversation that you can have with somebody that has actually died.
This is right out the last 20 minutes of the film AI, if you remember.
Yeah, so it really is, that's kind of where we're going. So that's why I said I'm not sure how I feel about this. But if you prefer to go to a get your advice from a higher source, I end the presentation with a live stream on Twitch. So Twitch, for the non-gamers, is one of the world's biggest gaming live stream platforms. And what Twitch did was they recreated something called AI Jesus. So it started out as a Christian kind of, you can ask the chatbot anything, but people have asked him really silly things. And the clip that I've used in my presentation is asking AI Jesus whether or not he enjoys toast in the mornings or not. And gave a very diplomatic answer. I must give that to the AI. I was very, very clever about that.
AI Jesus spoke in English as opposed to ancient Aramaic, I assume.
Yes.
Now, really, we're going to take a break here for a minute. Then we're going to come back right after that. We're going to sum things up. This is Brooke Spector. The Deep Dive is what you're listening to. And our guest is Dion Chang, who has introduced me to so many new concepts and new things to be terrified about that I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do this afternoon anymore. Anyway, we'll be right back after this message.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, your host. My guest is Dion Chang, who has opened doors. I mean, the terms that we have heard today range from polyamorous politics to, oh goodness, they're almost too, I didn't keep careful notes, but I'll have to go back and listen to it after we broadcast this. But, Dion, so where do we go from here? What's left?
Okay, there's two things, and I'm afraid they're both rather dystopian. I have to laugh because it's kind of what I find, and this is how I put things together, and this is what I see. The number one is so look at Flux. We've been studying or tracking Generation Z, Generation Z, whichever way you want to pronounce it, for 9 years already, long before they even started coming onto everybody's radar, because I knew that this generation, the first digital natives of humanity, would be very, very, very different. And I was, I've been proven right with that as well. What we are now tracking is Generation Alpha. So Generation Alpha are your little ones. So your under 10s, toddlers and up to preteens. And they are the children of the millennial. Okay. And I played a video about somebody warning the parents of Generation Alphas. And she shows a whole lot of AI generated videos of these perfect, perfect women, hourglass figures, long, straight, blonde hair, big boobs, all of those kind of things. And she said, you know that these women don't exist. And they are selling cosmetics, they're selling fashion, they're selling travel, wherever you want, everything like that. And the reason why I put that into it is she said right at the end of it, and she has a picture of, I think, maybe her daughter coming in front of a cell phone with a ring light on it. And she said, this is what our little ones are growing up with, this completely unrealistic view of it. So people might say, yes, you've seen that with, fashion, glossy fashion magazines before we're digital, we're selling that impossible dream as well. The difference is the prevalence of the social media, as well as just the words that chilled my blood was, she said, don't forget, these images are the worst they can ever be. We are only going to get better and more slick images. And already the images that you see are very, very realistic. And she said, just remember, we're only going to get more better. You're not going to really be able to tell if this is a real person or not a real person. And kind of that's when, and that was her kind of warning to parents to say, just be very, very wary about what's happening out there, because this is what they're going to follow. And then I'll just end on one thing, which is a commentary about where we are in society in 2024. So there's this huge use of Ozempic, the diabetes drug, because for weight loss. So people with diabetes can't get it because people are assuming that it melts fat away. It doesn't melt fat away. What it actually does, it suppresses all of your pleasure markers physiologically. So it's not food that you are, it's not melting away your fat. It is diminishing your appetite because you don't want it. But what people don't understand, it diminishes all of your other pleasure receptors. So what we've basically done is we have kind of moved that output, your end result is more important than the actual experience. So I will inject Ozempic. I don't care that all of my pleasure receptors are dead, but it will make me thin. So we've kind of gone into the strange world where we have a pleasureless society. And I think that is a rather depressing way to end, but you're seeing this thing. And what we also just dovetailed this with was actually in the economy pillar was the snack food industry actually getting worried. So it's gone to such a state where globally your multinational snack food company is really worried about what this is going to do and the knock-on effect to consumer spend in the future.
Oh my gosh, the entire world will collapse if yellow cheese whizzes and twists are no longer top of the market. This has been a mind-bending conversation, Dion. I don't even know how to sum this one up. I just want to say, listen to it today and then listen to the podcast, folks, and sort of pick up as much as you can from this and be very afraid or very hopeful, depending on where you sit. We've been speaking with Dion Chang, who is the head of Flux Trends. I'm Brooke Spector, your host for The Deep Dive. We'll be back again next week. I don't know what we're going to follow this one with, but we'll be back with something else. Somebody else with insights and ideas. Dion, again, thank you.
Thank you, Brooks. It's been a pleasure.